today actually the topic which we are having is for the junior meeting, but there are some very interesting details which are there in Radha Shyam's new book which are pertinent to all, even senior devotees. The topic is the blossoming of consciousness or the flowering of consciousness. Every morning in the Shikshashtakam we sing Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhavamaha Davagni Nirvapanam Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So this third line stanza in it, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. So anyone knows what is the translation? We read it every morning. Not every morning, once every 8 days. Later, especially Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. What is the translation of that?
It is the life of all
transcendental. No, that is Vidya Vadho Jeevanam. Yeah. Are you saying something, Ashwin Guru? Yeah?
The Kairava flower which is there, when moonlight falls on it, it blossoms.
Yeah, very good. It spreads the rays of the benediction moon. That's what it is said. It's a very interesting concept. Normally the lotus flower, it blossoms in sunlight. So when the sun rays fall out in the lotus flower, which is like a bud, it fully blossoms. But there's one particular type of lotus called Kairava, which blossoms in moonlight. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually, it's a very deep analogy, what he's saying is, that the consciousness of the soul is like that Kairava. The sunlight is actually scorching, so it's often hot and burning, whereas moonlight is very pleasant and soothing. So the consciousness of the soul, which is shrunken or which is in a bud state, then what happens when the remembrance of Krishna is created by the chanting of the holy names? That is like the moonlight. The Krishna, the remembrance of Krishna is like the moonlight. The consciousness of the soul is like the lotus flower. The moon rays fall on it and the lotus flower expands. Kairava expands. So like that, when the soul has its consciousness which is in the conditioned stage on the material platform, but when the remembrance of Krishna is created, then the consciousness expands. And then, by that Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaram. Shreya, the long-term goal of life, the highest welfare for the soul is achieved through the chanting. So actually, this what it means is that the ultimate welfare of the soul is in developing a relationship with Krishna. And actually the holy name helps us to develop a relationship with Krishna. In fact, the same concept is there in the Bhagavatam also. Pravishta karna randrena swanam bhavasaroruham. The sound vibration about Krishna, it enters through the ear into the heart. Then what happens? Then the lotus flower of the relationship of the soul with Krishna fully develops. And all the anarthas, dhunoti shamalam Krishna, all the anarthas are washed away. Just as the water in the dirty water in the rivers is washed away when there is rains. So it's an interesting concept, how the consciousness expands by remembrance of Krishna. Now, actually, all of us, we experience varieties of happiness and distress. But dead matter does not experience any happiness or distress. For example, if I read this, I feel the pain. Although it may break, it doesn't feel any pain. Because this wood, what is the difference between the wood and me? Consciousness. So, consciousness is the platform on which all emotions are experienced. Pain, pleasure, heat, cold, all experiences are there when there is consciousness. without consciousness there is no experience. A dead person, he has no consciousness. Somebody can come and kick him, he doesn't feel any pain. So now, the level of consciousness that we have determines the level of pleasure that we can experience. It's an interesting concept again. The animals, or let's go from the Vedic scripture explained, right? The scripture explained that our consciousness is like a flower which can gradually blossom. So there are five levels of the blossoming of this consciousness. The first is called as Sankuchit. Sorry, first is Avrut. Avrut is covered. So this Avrut consciousness is manifest especially in the trees and creepers. Not writing the other one. Avrut consciousness is in the trees and the creepers and the grass. Now the grass is so immobile that the ultimate goal of the grass is, let me grow. That's all, that's the conception of life that the grass has, nothing more. It can, a tree, let me just grow, let me drink water from below and let me grow. So tree also has consciousness. In fact, the consciousness is so covered that till a few centuries ago, till a few decades ago, many scientists thought that trees don't have any consciousness. It's so covered. That's called avrut. Avrut or covered. Right, the English also equivalent. So, because the consciousness of the tree is consciousness of the soul in the tree is very covered, the tree cannot experience much pleasure. What pleasure is there? Just does it stay at one place and it just drinks some water, takes some minerals and grows. No higher pleasure is there at all. And because there is no higher pleasure, there is no higher pain also. The tree also experiences some extent of pain. When we cut a tree, the tree also experiences pain. But the cutting of, say, a fruit from a tree is not the same as cutting the throat of a cow. Because the cow has much more consciousness. So the beasts, which is the second stage, they have what is called Sankuchit Chetana. Sankuchit is constricted, or the other word used is covered, Sankuchit. Shrunken, yeah. Constricted or shrunken, the word that is used is the English equivalent. So Sankuchit Chetana. Sankuchit means it's somewhat higher than the non-moving living entities. Especially, that's why in the Vedic literature it's very much often called chara and achara, moving and non-moving. So the non-moving fall under this avrut chetana, and the moving they fall under sankuchit chetana. So their ability to experience pleasure is somewhat higher. Now, a tiger, it can run around, it can roar, it can create fear in others, and of course it can catch prey and eat, but it can experience more pleasure than a tree, and simultaneously it can also experience more pain. So because the consciousness is more developed, then this is shrunken consciousness. Then after that, third level of consciousness is called the budding consciousness, or budding is also called as mukulit. Is about to bud. So, in your bud is a stage before a flower is formed. So, in this Mukulit Chetana, the soul in the human body has the ability to experience higher pleasures, although that ability is dormant. Now, for example, now if you see, generally we know that all living beings experience pleasure through four activities. Which are they? Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Everyone knows that, isn't it? But you see, when the Chetana is avrut, even eating, sleeping, mating, defending are also very restricted. A tree cannot even defend itself much. Somebody comes and cuts the tree, can't do much. To some extent it can defend. There are many trees and the tree grows some direction where it can get some light and thus survive. To some extent it can do. Eating, it cannot move. Just if it just spreads its roots, it gets some food, it will survive. So, animal, a beast can experience more pleasure through eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But still, it cannot experience anything higher than that. Whereas now when we come to this Mukulit Chetna, budding, here this is actually from this level human life starts. So we will inquire about this, we'll look into this a little later. You can just write down the two next. Next is actually called Vikasit. Vikasit is blossoming. So the bud has started spreading, it's blossoming now. And the last is Purna Vikasit, or fully blossomed. Now, human life is actually intrinsically divided. Divided in the sense that in human body, the soul wants more pleasure than what his body can offer. This is the problem with human life. Or it can be opportunity also, depending on how you look at it. If you see a beast, a tiger, it mates with a tigress only in the mating season. Other times it doesn't get attracted at all. A tiger, it doesn't eat well if it's not hungry. When if a human being goes by, if it just eats his food, if it doesn't perceive a threat, it will not eat. So, although the drives for eating, sleeping, mating, depending are strong in them, they are basically driven by the body. So, animal life is basically like a machine life, programmed. That's how they have to live. They have consciousness, but the consciousness has to function according to a pre-decided program. When I'm hungry, go and eat. When you feel the urge for sex, then go and have sex. Feel like sleeping, sleep. But when the soul comes to the human form, then at that time, the soul is actually eternal. And the soul actually searches for higher pleasure. That opportunity is there in the human form. And that's why we see that although human beings also do the same activities, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, human beings try to do it in far more refined ways. Isn't it? As the slogan of one advertising company is, let's make things better. Why? That is the human nature. Human beings want more pleasure than what is naturally available through the body. Now, this is the arrangement of the Lord. The Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, it is described that the Supreme Lord created all living beings. He created the birds, the beasts, the aquatics, the trees, all the species of life He created, but He was not satisfied after creating. And He contemplated. And then He created the human form of life. In the human form of life, the Supreme Lord provided the ability to inquire into the ultimate purpose of life. And having created the human form of life, Supreme Lord was satisfied. The human form of life is something very special. Now, we see that the activities of eating, sleeping, mating and defending are common to everyone. But, all the activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, they are all related to the body. And, the problem with the body is, the body is subject to the law of time. It is going to grow old, get diseased and die. Prabhupada says in one lecture, koi buddha nahi hona chahta hai, par prakriti sabko chupchap buddha bana deti. So nobody wants to grow old. But without opportunity for protesting also. Now just effortlessly, chupchap Prabhupada says. They are just forced to become old. And then what happens? As we grow old, the ability to do all these things decreases. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. It decreases. And that's why the pleasure that a person is going to get, it keeps decreasing, 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 and it's eventually finished. And there is no way it can be avoided. Prabhupada would say that these modern people talk about survival of the fittest. But in the material world, no one survives. Even the fittest don't survive. Everyone has to die. Isn't it? So there is no survival at all. So, this is one particular attribute of we'll discuss how this consciousness is different, you know, the human consciousness. One of the subtle forces which act in nature is the time factor. The time factor actually acts and transforms, degrades everything. No, a mango is ripe today, but tomorrow, if they keep the mango just like that, it will be spoiled. The time factor affecting it. Similarly, our bodies, they may be young now, but 20, 30 years later, they are degraded, they are finished. So, the human being alone has the ability to see the effect of the time factor. That actually, I may be enjoying life now, but I will not be able to enjoy life forever. So, why is it that my attempts for happiness are frustrated? They may not be frustrated now, but they are sure to be frustrated, no matter what I do. One time, Srila Prabhupada was going on a morning walk. At that time, he told one of his disciples, you know, he would ask his disciples to play the role of atheist, and he would challenge them, not to train them. So, what is the advancement of scientists? People were dying in the past, and now they have invented the atom bomb, by which they die faster. So, where is the advancement? So, his disciple, he said, at that time they were near an airport, so an airplane was flying in the sky. But, Prabhupada, we have invented the aeroplane by which we can fly in the sky now. Prabhupada said, but one part goes wrong in the aeroplane and crash. Everyone dies. You don't have control, Prabhupada. So the disciple said, but Prabhupada, we have little control. Prabhupada said, little control means no control. So he said that actually this is a deep point what Prabhupada was saying over there. Little control means no control means we may have control over a few things in our life, but ultimately we have no control over the body. The body is going to grow old, get diseased and die. So everybody in this world is making arrangements to enjoy through the body. But they are not taking into consideration the fact that the body is itself losing its ability to enjoy. People want, there's a joke, they say that people, they spend their health to gain wealth. And then they spend their wealth to gain health. So in their youth, they work very hard, they think I'll earn a lot of money. And after they earn money, what happens? By that time they have lost their health. But then they spend all the wealth to try to get the health back. But at the end they lose both the health and the wealth. So, this is actually inevitable in material life. That all one's plans for enjoyment are frustrated by the time factor. So, the human being has the ability to see the inevitable frustration of his plans in the future. And this is one particular endowment which the human form has. Now, I would like to ask you, do you really agree that human beings are not doing anything more than eating, sleeping, waiting, defending? Does anyone feel that they are doing other things also? They are doing other things or no? Do we spend 24 hours doing these things only?
At times we also think,
yeah, very good. What do we think about? Yeah. How do we eat, sleep, mate and defend? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. But it's true what you're saying. We also think. Actually, this is something which if people think open and they won't very easily agree to this proposal. That all that we do is eating, sleeping, mating and defending. They say that actually human beings have developed culture, they have got civilization, we have got languages, we have got literature, we have got philosophy, we have got science and technology, we've got so much which animals don't have. Isn't it? What animal likes literature? What animal inquires into philosophy? What animal has a culture? What animal has a civilization? Isn't it? There are so many differences. So many things which human beings do which animals don't do. And what will you answer if somebody says like this? Yes? Please feel free. Yeah? You like to answer? Give here. Who is? Yeah.
But we do all this for the mating, sleeping, and defending.
Acha, for we do all this for these things only.
Yes.
Yeah. To some extent, this is true. Actually, if you see literature, most of the literature talks about, especially the most common popular literature is some love stories. You know, that's basically mating. And there is some fighting involved in between. So actually, what is entertainment? There is entertainment is such a big industry nowadays. Actually, eating, sleeping, mating, defending is very troublesome. So what people do is, they eat, sleep and mate and defend on their imagination. They watch somebody else doing that and they enjoy. That is entertainment. So although it appears dramatically different, you know, a dog never watches TV. But it's ultimately the same activity. So certainly there are these things, you know, animals don't have languages, they don't write literature. But what is the purpose for which all this is being done? Prabhupada gives the example that a vulture flies high in the sky. But after flying high in the sky, he looks down at the ground to search. Where is the corpse? He's gone majestically high into the sky. Very few birds can go to the height that a vulture can go. But from there he looks down. Oh, where is some dead body which I can eat? So that height he has gone has not changed the purpose for which he is living, has not changed his vision, what he is searching for. So similarly, although we have done all these activities, it's just the form has changed, the purpose has not changed. The way in which a human being eats, sleeps, mates and defends is different than an animal. A dog may just gorge some refuse food on the street. A human being may eat processed and packed food in a jazzy fast food store. An animal may just mate on the street. A human being, he will watch some movie or he will browse on the internet, he will fill himself with passion and then he will go and enjoy. A human being, an animal, when it wants to defend, it will show its claws and its jaws and it will give out some bad smells, it will camouflage itself. And human beings, they defend by having fences around their house, by having barbed wires, by having locks, by having peepholes, by having bank accounts, by having health insurances, by having peace treaties, and by ultimately having missions, missiles. So, we may do it in a very sophisticated way. So, but it's the same thing. And similarly, an animal may just sleep on the street. A human being may sleep on a nice soft bed in an air-conditioned room. But after sleeping, both of them forget who they are and where they are. So there makes really no difference afterwards. The quality of the pleasure is the same. So now, why we are talking about this is, we'll come to this point. This developed consciousness is undoubtedly there. As I said, all these activities, culture, civilization, philosophy, literature, language, all these are signs of a developed consciousness. And it is this developed consciousness which enables human beings to do all these things. But this developed consciousness is meant to use all these things for a higher purpose. But what human beings are doing is, certainly they have developed all these things, but they are using it for the same purpose as the animals. Therein lies the problem. So now, it's very interesting how when human beings use their developed intelligence for eating, sleeping, mating and defending, it creates problems. You see, a dog lies down on the street and he sleeps very happy. But a human being lies in an air-conditioned bed and still he can't sleep. So much anxiety here. The human beings are the only species which suffers from sleeplessness. No other species suffers. So, we who are supposed to be the pinnacles of evolution, according to the pinnacles, the topmost of evolution, we struggle to get a pleasure that is fully available to the animals. Very strange. Not only that, Further, if we see, as far as mating is concerned, you know that animals mate and the humans mate. But a dog never comes and cries, you know, that bitch ditched me and my heart is broken. And I don't know what I should do in my life. Actually, if you see among the love songs, the most popular love songs are the songs of separation or of pain, betrayal. Why is that? Because most people are in that condition. So, animals mate and humans mate, but humans suffer far more in the process of trying to get bodily pleasure. And similarly, eating. You know, no animal suffers due to overeating or constipation or loose motion. Generally, no. But human beings generally suffer from these things. Not only that, it is human beings only who suffer due to artificial shortages. Though there are 8.4 million species. And out of these 8.4 million species, only the 4 million so-called intelligent species have to work to earn their food. All other species get their food free. Only human beings have to earn, and even after that they don't get the food. But after that they have to struggle. So, eating, sleeping, mating, and then what is remaining is defending. Now you see, all animals live in fear. But generally, animals live in fear. A dog generally is, a deer is not fearful of another deer. It is fearful of a tiger. So, an animal which will eat it. But human beings, who are they most fearful of? Human beings. So, it's a very strange situation. Generally, we don't think that other animals will trouble us. Now, one time, when Sanyasi had come, they are having a farm community in Brazil. So it is right in the middle of the jungle. There is waterfall and there are mountains and jungles all around. And then they have this small farm community. So he was giving a brahmachari class and he was presenting it. So one of our devotees asked him, Maharaj, are there no tigers and lions over there? He said, we are free from the most dangerous animal over there. So, man is the most dangerous animal. And we are free from, because there are only devotees living in the farm community, we are free from that trouble. So, actually, what is happening is that when the higher consciousness, as I said, this Mukulit Chetna budding consciousness, when that higher consciousness is used for a lower purpose, everything backfires. It backfires. What happens is that instead of getting higher pleasure, even the lower pleasure becomes difficult. As I am saying, that eating, sleeping, mating, defending are available with some struggles to the lower species. But to the human species, even eating, sleeping, mating, defending become difficult. So, nowadays there is this struggle for human rights. That human beings should be treated with dignity, and they should be properly respected, they should not be abused. So, Dayananda Swami writes in his book that actually, human rights are not meant to provide that which nature automatically provides to the animals. That, what is it, body sustenance and protection, that nature automatically provides to the animals. He explains that the real human right is enlightenment. That is what differentiates a human being from an animal. And it is when a human being seeks enlightenment, then the process of his blossoming of consciousness from the Mukulit to Viksit to Purna Viksit, that commences. So enlightenment is what, the opportunity for enlightenment is what differentiates a human being from an animal. As I said, one of the things I was saying is about the effect of Kal, how ultimately I have to die. That animals, they also are fearful of death. But animals, they can't do anything about it. They can't think about it. Why is this happening and what is the purpose of life? They can't think about that. But human beings can. And when human beings start thinking about it, then his actual real human life begins. So Dayanand Swami says that actually ISKCON is the only human rights organization in the world. Because this is the only organization providing the real human right, enlightenment. So what does this enlightenment actually refer to? We discussed how eating, sleeping, mating, defending eventually lead to frustration. So the human being certainly can enjoy more refined pleasures than the animals. For example, if somebody speaks some good literature, some nice poetry, a human being can relish that. Somebody sings some nice music, some nice songs. Now human animals can also, they are snake charmers which can charm the snakes, but it is only a particular kind of sound. That is not exactly, they are not relishing it. It is just something which is programmed in their body. But human beings can relish some finer pleasures. But the question, the key difference is, what is the direction which is pleasures are? Pleasures are utilized. You know, this, or the higher endowments are utilized. So music, Prabhupada explains, and he was talking with George Harrison. So George Harrison was a musician. And when Prabhupada, Yoko Ono, they were there with him, talking with him. So Prabhupada said that music is the means to express the highest devotion to God. So certainly music is something which animals can't either produce or experience. But human beings can. But the perfection of this is that it is directed towards Krishna, towards God. Idam hi pumsas tapasa shrutasyava svistasya suktasya buddhivattayo yad uttama shloka gunanuvarananam. The Bhagavatam explains that certainly human beings have many higher abilities. But the perfection of all these higher abilities is when uttama shloka gunanuvarananam, when they are all used to glorify the Supreme Lord. And that was what all Vedic culture is about. Vedic culture, there is music, all the ragas are there. But all the ragas are meant to glorify Krishna. There is magnificent architecture. The Ranganath temple is among the tallest buildings in the whole world. But it is a building to glorify Krishna. Sanskrit is the most complicated language in the whole world. In fact, the NASA researchers, they have found out that if you want to translate, if you want to use a language for programming, the best language is Sanskrit. Because Sanskrit is so scientifically structured. So, the best language was used to glorify Krishna. If the Mahabharata is actually the biggest poem in the whole world. Before the Mahabharata was found by the Western scholars, there were the Homer and the Oedipus, Homer and the Iliad, which were considered to be the biggest literatures. But the Mahabharata is 7 times the Homer and Iliad combined. Huge poetic work. It was mind-blowing for the Western scholars when they saw it first. So, all the special endowments which we discussed, language, literature, culture, civilization, all these are actually utilized in the Vedic literature to connect the soul with God. And culture, especially, what is culture? Anybody can say, what is culture? Yes? Tradition. Okay. Yeah. There are traditional cultures, but there are many cultures which don't conform to tradition also.
The way of life.
The way of life. Okay. Anyone else? It's a very common word. Bhaktivedanta Academy for Culture and Education. Many of you are living in basis. What is culture? Yes?
In culture world, C is for character, U for uprightness, then L is for love, then T is for trust in God, then U is for unity, R is for respect, and E is for education.
See, very nice. I didn't know this. Of course, what you are saying is true. In one sense, culture incorporates all these things. But from the Vedic point of view, what is real culture? Now, when Mohandas Gandhi was asked, what do you think about Western culture? He said, it's a good idea. It's a good idea means it's an idea that can be implemented. They have no culture right now. Maybe they can learn some culture. So, culture is a very interesting concept. According to the Vedas, culture means that social arrangement which subjugates the lower self and nourishes the higher self. Actually, every human being, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, has a lower self and a higher self. The lower self is the animal propensities, the lower series of consciousness. And the higher self is the tendency towards knowing about God. So culture is that social arrangement which, two things, what does it do? Subjugates the lower self and nourishes the higher self. So that's why we see in Vedic culture, all these activities, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, they are highly regulated. If you have to eat food that is offered to Krishna. You sleep at regulated times. Mate only within the institution of marriage. And for defense, there is the government which arranges for proper protection. The king is meant for protection. The whole point is that these animal propensities are regulated. And the higher self is nourished. In Vedic culture, in every way, God was the center of everything. We had gone to Jaipur. So in Jaipur, the Radha Govind Ji temple is there. And next to that, the palace of the king is there. Now the king had constructed his palace in such a way that as soon as he would get out of his bed in the morning, he would have a direct darshan of Radha Govind. So the kings were also saintly. And they also knew that God is actually I am the servant of God. God is the actual king and I am representing him. So in fact, Maharaj Kulashekhar, he had a tradition, and many Indian kings also had a tradition, that every day at the end of the day's activities, he would go to the temple and report all that had happened to the Lord. The Lord is the actual proprietor and I am functioning on his behalf. So he would go and report it. So, this way the Lord was kept at the center of everything in Vedic culture. And this way the higher self was nourished. Now, what does it actually mean to nourish the higher self? I mentioned earlier about how human soul in a human form wants more pleasure than what the body can offer. That's why, as I said, we are all human beings, let's make things better. If I want to eat food, then a cow, throughout its life, it will just eat grass. But a human being, if you tell him throughout your life, you eat the same food every day, morning, afternoon, evening, you get fed up. So, no, I want something better. So this innate tendency is there. Let's make things better. If a person is staying in a hut, he wants to stay in an apartment. If he's staying in an apartment, he wants to stay in a bungalow. Staying in a bungalow, he wants to stay in a villa. So this innate tendency is there to try to improve his situation, to try to get better pleasure. But the Vedic scriptures say, direct this self-elevation tendency not in the realm of matter, but in the realm of spirit. Try to improve yourself, not materially, but spiritually. And that is what is the opportunity provided by human life. And what does it mean to improve yourself spiritually? It is not an abstract concept. The soul is a part of Krishna. And the soul has a loving relationship with Krishna. And when the soul forgets Krishna, then he searches for relationships with different objects, persons and ideas in this world and tries to get some happiness. But ultimately, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And Supreme, by definition, means that he has no substitute. So the soul who is actually meant to love Krishna can never be happy by loving anyone other than Krishna. Because no one can equal Krishna in the six opulences that he has, in the love that he can shower on the soul. So, actually the full development of consciousness is manifest when the soul fixes his consciousness on Krishna. We are discussing how consciousness is the platform of happiness. And the grass, the trees have very little consciousness, so little pleasure, little pain. The animals have more consciousness, so more pleasure, more pain. Human beings still more consciousness, so more pleasure. Human beings can experience great pleasure when their plans succeed. Same time, they can experience devastating pain when their plans are shattered. So, human beings, if you see, they are the only living beings who have the dubious distinction of committing suicide. And all living beings try to struggle to live. But human beings are the only living beings who struggle to sometimes give up their life. Why is this? Because the consciousness is so developed that we can experience intense pleasure, at the same time we can experience intense pain also. Consciousness is that developed. So, the full development of consciousness is when the consciousness is fixed to Krishna. They wonder why is that considered the full development of consciousness? Because Krishna is eternal. Krishna is actually Sat Chit Ananda in full. Krishna is a reservoir of happiness. And a soul connects himself with Krishna, he gets unlimited happiness. See, all the objects of this world, they can give some happiness. It's not that there is no happiness in them, but the happiness that they all give is limited. For example, you know, if a person hears some materialistic music, mundane song he hears, it gives him some pleasure. But then, that pleasure doesn't last. It is after you hear it 5-10 times and then it's boring. Now, on your birthday, somebody comes and gives you a gift. Very eager. Look at it, open it, and you see it. Look at it up, look at it down, look at it this side, and you put it aside and forget it. See, before the gift is given, you are so eager to see it. But after you get it, it's finished and there's not much pleasure in it. So, actually, material pleasure ceases to be pleasure after some time. That thing which gives us pleasure, after some time it stops giving us pleasure. So, whereas Krishna is not like that. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter, Yad yad vibhuti matsatvam shri madurjitame bhava tatta deva vagachatvam mamatejam shasambhava. Explains that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. What Krishna means to say is that whatever attractive thing you see in this world, whatever it is that you find beautiful, whatever it is you find that is glorious, the glory, the beauty, the attractiveness of that thing comes from me. What Krishna is intending to say by this is that therefore you don't become attracted to that thing, you become attracted to me. When we become attracted to attractive things separate from Krishna, then that is a source of suffering. Because those things, whatever is attractive, that attractiveness is limited, tiny. And that is sure to end. So when we see beautiful things, we should remember that this beauty is just a spark of the beauty of Krishna. And then we become attracted to Krishna. And Krishna, being unlimited, can give us unlimited happiness. So, actually, human life, its perfection is when the consciousness of the soul is fully fixed on Krishna. The remembrance of Krishna constantly gives him happiness. As a development of consciousness means the development of the ability to experience happiness. And the more the soul is remembering Krishna, the more the soul is happy. One time, Srila Prabhupada, he was sitting in a garden in Los Angeles. Early morning it was, and the sun rose. And then the sun had just risen, so the rays were just falling. And the rays just spread and they went all around Srila Prabhupada's body. So Prabhupada said, "Oh, this is Krishna's embrace," Prabhupada said. Actually, the sun is a manifestation of Krishna's embrace. So Prabhupada was perceiving how actually the Supreme Lord, who is caring for all his children through the medium of the sun, this is Krishna's embrace. So Prabhupada was sitting on the floor. One devotee brought a cushion. He says, No, I am sitting on Krishna's lap," Prabhupada said. So of course, it is not that Krishna has his personal existence, but a devotee sees everything in relationship with Krishna. And because he sees everything in relationship with Krishna, the remembrance of Krishna brings him unlimited happiness. Now this is something mysterious. This is something which cannot be materially explained. It just has to be experienced. You know, the material happiness is, has a characteristic. It is in view, but out of experience. You can see it, but if you try to enjoy it, I don't know what happened. I thought I was going to be happy, but now when we run towards material pleasure runs away from us. We think, I did this, but maybe I have to do this more to get happiness. And then, you know, we just feel that material happiness is just a few steps away. But that's the way it always stays, no matter how many steps we take. It always stays just a few steps away. So material happiness is always in view, but out of experience. Whereas spiritual happiness is out of view, but in experience. So one time the devotees, in, I think it was in Poland. Poland is a communist country. So at that time the devotees there, they would do kirtan secretly. So they would be in a room and they would raise their hands and they would chant very softly and sing. So somehow the KGB, which is the Russian, which is communist secret service agency, they came to know about this. Something fishy is going on over here. And then they came and inquired. They found out that something was going on and they came and arrested the devotees. They did not arrest, they interrogated the devotees. And then they said, the devotees said, what have you been doing? They were very careful not to keep any books or anything outside so they would not be get caught. But then they asked, what are you doing? Oh, why are you arresting us? What are we doing? So you are taking drugs. You are not taking any drugs. He said, what makes you think that you are taking drugs? No, we peeped in through the window and we saw that you were raising your hands and stands and very happy looking and dancing and singing. So we suspected that you were taking drugs. So the point is that, you know, spiritual happiness is not in view. You can't figure out what is happening. Why are these people so happy? There is no material reason for it. But it can be experienced. For one who wants to, he can experience spiritual happiness. He chants Hare Krishna, he can experience spiritual happiness. But you cannot see any material reason for this. So the point which I was making over here is that actually when we are attracted to Krishna, the remembrance of Krishna brings great happiness to the soul. In fact, the word Krishna has many meanings. But one of the meanings of Krishna is that person who can end unlimited unhappiness. It's two uns. One person who can end unlimited unhappiness. That is the meaning of the word Krishna. So in this material world, the soul suffers unlimitedly. But the chanting of Krishna's name can actually end all unhappiness. So it is something which has to be just experienced. One has to chant Hare Krishna, participate in kirtans, practice the process of Krishna consciousness. One can see how one's ability to, one's happiness increases and one's ability to relish life also increases more and more. What happens is, a materialistic person, his worldview is always very limited. What happens, as I said, the lower the consciousness, the lower is the ability to experience pleasure. So if a person is just interested in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, the only pleasure that he can experience is through eating, sleeping, mating and defending. He cannot experience any other pleasure. But if a devotee, if a person has developed his Krishna consciousness, then he can, at any place, he can be chanting, he can be singing, he can be remembering Krishna, and he can experience great happiness. That's why the Bhagavatam, it compares a devotee to a very wealthy person. Very interesting comparison. It says, a wealthy person, he can go to any part of the world, and on the basis of his wealth, he can enjoy life. But similarly, the devotee can go to any part of the world, and he can chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And he can enjoy life, he can experience happiness. So the devotion is the wealth which a devotee carries with him all around. And in this way he experiences great wealth, he experiences great happiness. So His Holiness Indradhanu Maharaj was going to one of the Arabian countries for preaching. And of course there you cannot go in the Vaishnava dress, so he was wearing civilian clothes and he had gone. And all his papers were right, but somehow the immigration officers, they stopped him. And they checked all his papers, they went through everything several times. They couldn't find anything. And finally they let him go. And he asked, No, why did you interrogate me? Why did you stop me? Said, you look too happy.
No? So we felt that something was wrong. Maybe you are smuggling something. Otherwise, why are you so happy? So, a devotee, actually,
he experiences unlimited happiness in relationship with Krishna. And ultimately what happens is, as I said, Smukulit Chetna is budding. And as one practices Krishna consciousness, the Chetna starts expanding, the consciousness starts expanding. And a person can experience more and more happiness. Because what happens is, as his relationship with Krishna develops, Krishna is actually everywhere. So, because Krishna is everywhere, a soul can experience his relationship with Krishna also everywhere. And he can be happy. And then, as he becomes a pure devotee, then the remembrance of Krishna becomes constant and unbreakable. And then there is no break to his happiness. So, where the soul seeks pleasure through the body, through eating, sleeping, mating and defending, it's going to be frustrated. But when the soul seeks pleasure through Krishna consciousness, then he doesn't need the body. In the conditioned stage, we use the body to practice Krishna consciousness. But as we advance, then we don't need the body. The soul, in fact, becomes more and more purified, and then it experiences pleasure at the spiritual platform. And when that happens, then the soul no longer has any desires to enjoy this world. And then the soul doesn't need a material body. Soul becomes purified, and then he goes back to Krishna. When he goes back to Krishna, there is unlimited happiness. And that is the goal of every intelligent person. Actually, we cannot conceive what the spiritual world is like or what spiritual happiness is like. But we can get some idea of it. When we come in the association of devotees, we sing and dance and we experience joy in the association of devotees, that is just a small glimpse of the happiness that is waiting for us in the spiritual world. Actually, in the spiritual world, the same happiness which we are experiencing is there in far greater quantity, but with several significant differences. The spiritual world, there is no material body to restrict our happiness. In the material world, even if we practice bhakti, if we dance in kirtan, we get tired after some time. We may want to dance, but the body doesn't allow us to dance. The body restricts our happiness. And then, not only that, the mind is constantly distracting us. There is maya which is tempting us through the mind. But in the spiritual world, there is no maya. So, the happiness which we are experiencing now is just a glimpse of what is awaiting us for us in the spiritual world. And there it is pure nectar. Unadulterated nectar. And that is what a soul can achieve by the process of expanding his consciousness, allowing his consciousness to blossom. And ultimately, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam Pratipadam Purnamrutasvadanam. So it's an ocean of happiness which keeps expanding. And pratipadam, at every moment there is nectar. And that is what the soul is entitled for. So certainly, the special ability of the human being to want more pleasure is what the body can offer. That is not meant to be neglected or to be covered over. But that is meant to be properly directed. By directing it towards Krishna, actually the consciousness develops. And when it develops fully, then there is full happiness. So, we will have some revision now. I'll ask some questions and maybe you can tell the answer. Then after that we'll have some question answers. So, we discussed about the blossoming of consciousness today. So, what is the analogy involved in this blossoming of consciousness? The analogy from the Shikshashtakam. Can you have the mic?
The blossoming of Kairava flower.
What causes blossoming?
The moonlight causes it blossoms.
So similarly?
Similarly, our consciousness is developed or blossoms as the moonlight of chanting holy name.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. The remembrance of Krishna through chanting of the holy names. Yes. So it expands. Very nice. And then, what is it that determines how much happiness and pain we can experience? Yes, going through.
According to our level of consciousness.
Yeah, level of consciousness, very good. So, what is the gradation?
From trees, then.
So, trees are which level?
covered.
Covered.
First one. And second, animal and human.
Yeah, exactly. So, what is the difference between this budding level and the lower levels of Sankuchita and Mukhavrat? Who is there behind? The end. Yes?
The human form of life starts from that level.
Starts from?
Budding life.
Budding life, yes. So what exactly is the difference? What is it that differentiates human life? Means as far as the consciousness is concerned?
Prabhuji, in human form of life, God has given the potency to inquire about the purpose of life.
Yes, very good. To inquire about the purpose of life. So, how do the lower forms seek pleasure and how do the human beings seek pleasure? Okay, how do the lower forms seek pleasure? Yes?
Eating, sleeping. The lower forms enjoys in eating, sleeping, mating and defending.
Yeah.
But the human form of life enjoys when it directs his consciousness towards the God.
Enjoys by directing towards God. So is it that human beings just involve themselves in only these four activities, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, or do they do something higher also? If yes, what are the higher things that human beings do? Yes. Sorry? Yeah, attraction with the Lord. That is the ultimate goal, right? As I already said. But if somebody doesn't know about Krishna, still there are some higher things which human beings do. Which are the higher things? Yes.
We have literature, languages, culture, philosophy.
Yeah, culture, philosophy, fine arts is also there. I didn't forget to mention that. Doing some painting or sing music, many of these are there. But then what is the... Why do we still consider human beings also to be at the level of animals? If they are not connected with God? They are doing these higher activities, but what is the difference? Yes?
They are doing these all activities only for the... They are doing these activities with different ways.
Yeah.
With the help of literature, culture or language, fine arts, whatever you say. This is the way of doing it, the thing is changed. Otherwise the purpose is same.
Yeah.
Example of vulture.
Yeah, very good. Vulture goes high but still looking for corpses. Then we discuss and what happens? When we use the higher consciousness for the lower purpose. What happens is that even the lower pleasures become difficult to achieve. We discuss about that. I'm going to say each of them. How about eating? Yes?
Well, overeating it
Yeah, indigestion problem, very common to human beings. Anything else? As far as eating is concerned? Yes? Yeah, exactly. So, that is, we just don't care, either overcare for the body or neglect the body. But either way we suffer. And we talk also about artificial shortages. You know, by hoarding food, hoarding grains. And there are human beings who cause other human beings to starve. What about sleeping? Yes? No one? Yes?
So we told the example of dog. That a dog can sleep in the street very fully, very nicely. Not only problem. But a human being can, when sleeps in the room only, he becomes very much anxiety. What will happen tomorrow? What is going to happen tomorrow? A number of things are there.
So he can't sleep also.
Yeah, which means he cannot sleep with peace and fully as the dog can sleep.
Yeah, sleeping. What about mating? Yes, someone else who has not answered till now? Yes.
Human beings only perform suicide due to not achieving.
Yeah. Exactly. So, frustrated love. The problem, or betrayed love rather. Problem only in human beings. Then what about defending? Yeah, give me the mic.
one animal fears of the other animals, like deer fears of the tiger, but in case of human being, fears to human being.
Yeah, very strange. So what is the, why is all this happening? Why is it that we are not able to, although we have a higher endowment, we are unable to experience higher pleasure? Yes, Ganesh Rule.
We have been given the higher level of consciousness, we are using it for the lower things.
Yeah, exactly. So higher consciousness used for lower purpose leads to problems. So then, what is the solution? In more specific terms, not just, you know, use it for a higher purpose. That is an obvious answer, no? But more specific terms. Yes?
God is the center of all the activities that
you do. Yeah, God is the center of activities. All. And that was what Vedic culture was all about. So what is the meaning of culture, actual culture? Ah, yes? Yeah. Can you give the mic?
Social arrangement that subjugates lower self and nourishes the higher self.
Achha, which subjugates the lower self and nourishes the higher self. What are the lower selves and the higher selves? Anyone else? The same hands are raising. Ah, yes, please. You take the mic.
Lower self means just eating, sleeping, waiting, depending, mainly bodily conception. But the higher self means inquiring about soul, that where soul and absolute rest.
Yeah, exactly. Very nice. Especially higher self means developing a relationship with Krishna at the platform of the soul. And then we discuss how Vedic culture, all the special attributes, literature, language, all these are used for glorifying God. And then later on we discuss about the nature of material pleasure and spiritual pleasure. What is the nature? Yes, please.
Material world, material body restricts the material pleasure.
Yeah.
But in spiritual world, there is no limitation.
Yes, no limitation to our pleasure. The material body is actually, although people are making so many arrangements for their pleasure, they can make no arrangements to stop the effect of time on their body. The body grows old. And so all their patterns of pleasure are foiled. And then something more about a comparison between material pleasure and spiritual pleasure. Yes, true.
Material pleasure is limited, but spiritual is unlimited.
Yes, exactly. Limited and unlimited. Something more specifically. Yes.
Material pleasure is in view but out of experience.
Yeah.
Spiritual pleasure is out of view but it can be experienced.
Right, in experience, yeah. You don't see anything happening when devotees are chanting. They're just sitting and doing nothing. But they are experiencing the greatest pleasure. Prabhupada writes in that easy journey to other planets. He said the scientists are actually making the big spacecraft to go to the higher planet. But we can go to the highest planet just by sitting in one place and chanting Hare Krishna and go to Golok Vrindavan. So any other points are remaining? Yes?
In case of material pleasure, we have to depend on the other things. Maybe other things or some things or someone. But in case of spiritual pleasure, it's independent of other things. It's dependent on yourself.
Very true. It's inside us, whereas my spiritual pleasure is, material pleasure is outside us. That's why I said a devotee is like compared to a wealthy person. He can go to any part of the world and he can relish life. Anything else is remaining?
Krishna is.
Yes.
Krishna is one who can end all kinds of unhappiness.
Yeah, Krishna, one who can end unlimited unhappiness. And we discuss how all the attractive things in this world are actually attractive because of Krishna's spark being present. But Krishna says, don't become attracted to these things, become attracted to me. And then you will gain real happiness. So are there any questions?
Yes, Shiri. Yes.
Why is pure devotee Lord Krishna, then why he is not staying with Krishna in Golok?
Why Maya is not staying with Krishna? Actually, Maya is expansion. Maya Devi is an expansion of Radharani. So, Radharani is present with Krishna, but in the material world, when the conditioned soul wants to enjoy separate from Krishna, then illusory expansion of Radharani comes in this material world to delude the living entity and ultimately frustrate and direct the living entity back to Krishna. So she is certainly a pure devotee. And that's why, unless we become pure, she doesn't allow us to go to Krishna. She checks us very thoroughly. Yeah, I mean, any small material desire will attract us and distract us. Attract us to distract us from Krishna. Does that answer your question? The question is somewhat different.
Pure devotee is a God. He should also return.
Oh, like that, okay. Actually, the pure devotees of the Lord, they are interested in the Lord's service. And wherever the Lord wants them to do service, they will go there. For example, Yamaraj is a pure devotee. But then his service is to actually punish all the sinful living entities. It's a thankless task. But he has to do that in order to reform all the conditioned living entities. He has to punish them. So he's himself a pure devotee. He does it in the remembrance of Krishna. So pure devotee doesn't necessarily mean that he necessarily has to be with Krishna. Pure devotee can be in the material world also. Krishna sends his representatives many times to the material world to do service for him. So they come to the material world. In fact, as I said, the whole purpose of the material world is to direct the living entity back to Krishna. And that is the service that Maya Devi does. Maya Devi attracts the soul towards things other than Krishna. And by that, what happens is, the soul gets distracted from Krishna. But then, after that, the soul experiences suffering. And then through this process, the soul gradually realizes that, actually I cannot be happy with anything other than Krishna. One time, Srila Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan. At that time, one disciple asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, if our purpose is to serve Krishna, then why is Maya so strong?" Prabhupada immediately replied, "Because your purpose is not strong." So, Maya will not trouble a person who is fixed in Krishna consciousness. But for one who has material desires, then Maya keeps attracting him. And the purpose of Maya is actually ultimately for the soul himself to see how all material desires are useless. So, it is said that spiritual master and Maya Devi are doing the same service. The spiritual master is actually telling the conditioned soul that you cannot enjoy this world, you will not be happy here. And Maya Devi is giving that soul the experience. The Srota Swami was telling, he has very big expressive face and head. So he is saying, and if you don't learn by hearing through the ears, you'll have to learn by being hit on the head. So ultimately, everybody has to come to the same realization that the material world is not a place of happiness. You cannot be happy in separation from Krishna. And Maya Devi, by promising that pleasure, attracts the soul away from Krishna, frustrates him, and ultimately directs him back to Krishna. Because the soul wants, that's why the soul has come. But to be attracted to a soul has come here because he doesn't want to love and serve Krishna. So Maya's job is to offer him substitutes for Krishna. And then to show him how none of the substitutes will work. Does that answer your question? Any other questions?
Hare Krishna.
Where is the mic?
Yeah.
Ah, yes, Swarupa.
Roji, you have said that one can get eternal happiness when one connects himself to Krishna. Because Krishna is eternal, Sachidananda, so he is 100% absolute in happiness also. If one connects himself to Krishna, then he also becomes happy. But material nature, it is also, we have that shloka, Om Purnamada Purnamada. So it is said that whatever is created by the Lord, energy is flowed, energy is also absolute 100%. So if and this material nature, Prakriti, is also Krishna's energy. If one tries to get happiness out of this, then why is he not getting happiness?
See, when we see everything is Purna, everything is actually complete and perfect, there is Krishna is independently complete and perfect. We are dependently complete and perfect. For example, this finger, it is fully capable of doing all the activities which a finger is supposed to do. But the finger is cut off from the body and it becomes functionless. So our completeness is certainly there, but it is dependent completeness. That means when we connect ourselves with Krishna, then we are complete. Then we don't need anything more for our completeness. But Krishna says, Mamai Mamsho Jiva Loke, we are all his parts. So our completeness is dependent. So if a soul connects himself with Krishna, then he will not perceive any incompleteness. The Prabhupada writes in that purport over there, all incompleteness is due to incomplete knowledge of the complete. It's because we don't know Krishna, so that's why we experience varieties of incompleteness. And the material nature is complete for the purpose for which it is met. It is completely perfect for the purpose of, first, for frustrating the living entity, and the second is for enlightening him. For that purpose it is perfect. If Prabhupada says, if you want to forget Krishna, Krishna will give you unlimited ways to forget him. Krishna will give you unlimited excuses for not remembering him. And if you want to remember him, Krishna will give you unlimited ways to remember him. So material nature is arranged like that. So when you talk about Krishna, he is independently complete. And everything else is dependently complete. Does that answer your question? Something more you want to ask? Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, okay.
Whether Maya has, that means Krishna has created the Maya, if yes, then why? And if no, then why? That means what is the purpose of that creating the Maya?
Actually, this material world is created not because of the Lord's desire, but by the Lord's sanction. It is that the Lord doesn't want any soul to come to the material world and leave him. But there are souls who rebel against him, who don't want to obey him. And then, for them, the Lord creates the material world. It is a government. The government wants all the citizens to live free and happy. The government also constructs a prison, because it knows that there will be law-breaking citizens. Similarly, the Lord creates Maya Devi, and he creates material world along with Maya Devi, who is the superintendent of this material world, because there are rebellious living entities, and for them he creates them. So in that sense, it is the Lord who creates. But in one sense, it is not he who creates; it is our desire which is responsible for the creation of this material world. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavata that apareyamitasvanya yedam dharyate jagat, that this material world is being maintained by the living entities. What it means is, this is existing because of the living entities. Otherwise, the Lord doesn't have to create this material world. He doesn't need this material world at all. He is happy in his spiritual world, and he wants all of us also to be happy. That's why, if you see all the devatas, you know, their posture is like this. They are offering ashirvads. But Krishna's posture is like this. He is playing a flute. So other devatas, they will give you ashirvad, so you continue to stay in the Dukhalema Shasatam world. But Krishna, he plays his flute, he attracts us out of this material world. Yes? Any other questions? Yes, here Shirishpur had a question.
In the
you said that a dog in the street gets the same pleasure of eating or sleeping as the human being, but we can't see that when dog sleeps, that what is he happy or sad. While we can see in a human being that he is sleeping, then he is sad or happy. But in dog, if he is, we don't know he is sad or happy. So how can we know?
Actually, in human beings also we cannot know. A smiling face is not necessarily an indication of a happy heart. Most people are not happy, but they smile because they pretend to be happy. They want the world to think that I am happy. So, of course, as the chetna is more and more sankuchit, actually chetna cannot be manifest to others. For example, trees happens in distress, we cannot see that. But there are some experiments which are conducted which show that a tree also experiences happiness and distress. Now, if a human being stands near a tree and he curses the tree, threatens the tree, and the growth of the tree gets stunted, and then otherwise if he offers loving words to the tree, and you know, and basically there is a loving reciprocation, then actually the tree also grows nicely. There is consciousness there also, in the trees also. So similarly, in the lower animals, there is consciousness. And if you live closely with a dog, don't do that. But if you live that, you can actually see that, especially those who have people who have pet dogs, they can actually feel that my dog is happy, my dog is not happy. Dogs also have moods. But there, as you rightly said, there is a much more, because the consciousness is not so developed, it's not so clearly manifest. But then ultimately, all other about everything else, now we have to see through Shabda Praman, we have to see through Shastra. Now, a materialistic person may appear to be very happy. Now, he may be going in a nice car, wearing a suit, and maybe having a mobile, wearing a goggle. But a devotee should be able to see, he's like a fish out of water. Suffering he is. So we have to learn to see through Shabda Praman. Because actually, Prabhupada says a very nice thing. He says that, you know, with our eyes, we cannot see the soul, we cannot see Krishna, we cannot see the holy name. So what is left to see? These are the supreme realities in the life of a devotee. We are the soul and Krishna is our Lord and the holy name is the way to the Lord. But none of these we can see. So actually, Pratyaksha Praman is actually very limited. And with our eyes, we cannot see much. Of course, through Shastras we can see, and as I said, if you observe closely, Pratyaksha Vagamam, we can also observe closely. But generally, as it's not so much visible to our eyes. Any other questions? Yes? Yeah.
Prabhuji, as you said, Yamraj's thankless task is to punish living beings. Now, as you observe, people who are sent in jail, they are sent to suffer. And it is expected that they will be reformed. But it never happens. They get better guru than themselves, who tells them why you are here. So, by punishing, people cannot be cured. So, why is it, in first place, people are sent to hell? And second thing, this is especially important when Krishna says that I am your father, mother, and well-wisher.
That's why, along with punishment, Krishna provides for enlightenment. Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthana dharmasya tadatmanam srijamya. Now, the adharma which Krishna talks about is not, you know, some terrorists coming and exploding some bombs or something like that, whatever. That is not adharma. A real adharma, according to Krishna, is when people consider material life to be more important than spiritual life. That is adharma. Dharmasya glani means that people forget the goal of life. So Krishna comes and he gives his message by which a person can be enlightened. And punishment plus enlightenment leads to reformation. Now, what happens is the conditioned soul has a free will. And if you say, as you say, that in the prisons most people don't get reformed, but some get reformed. A few. Those who want to, they can be reformed. So Krishna provides opportunities for enlightenment for anyone and everyone. And those who want,
They can get become enlightened. They can inquire, why am I suffering and how can I get out of suffering? Now, one time, one person asked an ISKCON sannyasi, there are so many spiritual organizations. How do you know who is a genuine guru? Who is genuine? So this Maharaj replied that, first you become genuine. Before asking who is a genuine guru, first you become genuine. That means, you know, people generally, actually the ideal shastras say you should go to a spiritual master to find out what is the goal of life. But people go to the spiritual master to, they have their own goal of life and they want a spiritual master to help them in fulfilling the goal of life. Now they have the goal of life, I want to earn money or I want this, I want that, and then they go to a guru for that. But if a person is sincere, what is this? Why am I suffering? How can I get out of suffering? What is the way out of suffering truly? A person is ready to inquire genuinely, Krishna is there in the heart. No, to turn to Krishna is our problem. If we do that, then Krishna takes all the responsibility. But most people, they never turn to Krishna. Even they turn to Krishna, they turn to Krishna not for taking his advice, but for asking him to fulfill their own demands. Now if you see in the first chapter of the Gita, Arjuna is speaking and Krishna is just listening. Just once Arjuna says something. And then finally, Arjuna is giving so many reasons. This is why I want to do this. I don't want to fight because it will lead to Pandasankara. It will lead to so and so. He gives so many reasons. But then, Arjuna finally says, Krishna, I am confused. Machaitat dhitma kataranno garyo yadva jayema yadiva jayayo. I don't know. And then he says, now you tell me what is the best for me. Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava pichyami tvam dharma sammoodha cheta. I am asking you, you tell me what is the best for me. And then Krishna opens up. So, the Lord is there in our heart. If we want His help, we will get His help. But most people don't ask the Lord for help. So then for them, the punishment is there because the law of karma is there. The law of karma, see, Krishna creates an arena where He allows for restricted enjoyment according to Shastra. But somebody wants unrestricted enjoyment against Shastra, then the law of karma is there to punish him. And as I said, the cycle of punishment and enjoyment, this goes on as long as the soul doesn't turn towards Krishna. If it turns towards Krishna, then the next element comes in, that is enlightenment. And then he starts coming out of the cycle of enjoyment and punishment. Does that answer your question?
I don't want to judge whether Krishna is right or wrong, but I am trying to understand why this thing happens. What I mean to ask is, see, when person goes to hell and he comes, he gets next life, he does not remember that he has been to the hell. Even this is a hell, type of hell. But question is, why? When it doesn't make any sense, because the person forgets that in his previous life he has suffered in hell. So it doesn't change him or it doesn't make him understand by this punishment.
Krishna says, Mattaha smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I give knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness based on your desire. So it is not that, you know, Krishna puts us into forgetfulness, we put ourselves into forgetfulness. It's not that, why to speak about hellish suffering? We have suffered in this life also. But how much do we remember that? The desire for enjoyment is so strong that the desire for enjoyment actually is, by seeing that how strong the desire is, Krishna says, okay, if this is what you want to do, then if you want to enjoy, you need to have a worldview which will allow you to enjoy. So you can continue to think that this world is a place of enjoyment. So it's not that Krishna puts us into forgetfulness. See, a soul goes to hell because he has done some past karma. And then he suffers. And then he comes back here. And when he comes back here, in the womb, he remembers. And he prays to Krishna, Krishna, please save me. But then again, when he comes out of the womb, the materialistic conception of life is what he carries on with. So Vedic culture was originally meant that parents would teach the children. But actually, they are meant to become a devotee of Krishna. Now, of course, now the parents don't teach, but then we can't say that the blame belongs to the parents. Because the souls who come in Kali Yuga in an environment where nobody is teaching God consciousness, the souls have done such sort of devilish karma in the past, because of which they come into this devilish age. So, actually, this notion is there that if we remember, for example, the hell suffering or our past lives, for example, we may be able to practice Krishna consciousness better. But it doesn't work like that. The real life story, you know, this Titanic, it was designed by a person named Thomas Andrews. And he designed it, and he was on the first ride of the Titanic, and he died when the Titanic sank. And this Thomas Andrews has now reincarnated as a person named William Barnes. And this William Barnes has given a scientific explanation of why the Titanic sank so fast. It was made of metal, the first ship made of metal, and it was supposed to be quite sturdy. But it sank, and it sank very fast. We have explained that the thickness of the metal was such that it caused a resonance effect. And he said that when in my previous life, Thomas Andrews, I knew that this may happen. And therefore, there was some Jimmy Black or someone who was funding the whole project. And I told him that we should construct a thicker hull. But he said, no, we can't spend more money. We have to make profit. So he did not allow me to construct a thicker hull. And then, what happened that Jimmy Black or whatever, I forget his name, that person escaped on a life raft. And the Thomas Andrews sank. So he clearly remembers his past life. In fact, he has written books, he has given audio tapes, and scientists have also verified to a large extent because they checked through the debris. They checked the debris, what had happened to the Titanic. And the way the Titanic had shattered, and they did a computer simulation according to William Barnes' idea, and they found it matched. So scientifically, William Barnes' explanation of the resonance effect causing the destruction of the Titanic has been verified. But you know this William Barnes, he says, my life's mission is to protect the good name of the Andrews family. No, that Andrews has died, he's in a new body, he knows that I was there and I am here. But his remembrance of his past life has not made him at all attracted towards spirituality. He's still concerned, in that I was a good man, but I was given a bad name in my previous life. So in my new life, rather than inquiring, who am I lived after death, he's thinking, in my previous life, the bad name which I was given, it should be corrected. So this is the extent to which a bodily conception can be there. So, remembrance, as I said, what to speak about highly suffering. Even in this life, we have suffered. But that doesn't lead to transformation. Ultimately, it is, suffering is meant to transform the desire of the living entity. But the desire is always free. We can desire whatever we want. So we can turn to Krishna even without suffering. And even with suffering, we may not turn to Krishna. That is up to us. Krishna at the end of Bhagavad Gita, he says, he gives the whole message of the Bhagavad Gita. And then he says, Vimrishaita asheshena yathechasi tathakuru. So deliberate, think deeply on what I have told you. And do as you desire. So the desire is always there. So it requires some deeper thought. But because the soul wants to enjoy, then the Lord gives him forgetfulness of the suffering. See, for example, if somebody in your family has just passed away, and a friend comes and tells you, well, let's go for a movie. Do you think you can go for a movie? You'll be disgusted with the whole idea. So similarly, if the soul remembers all the horrifying experiences he has gone through in his previous lives or during his stay in hell, he will not be able to enjoy at all. But the soul wants to enjoy. And then because he so desperately wants to enjoy, the Lord gives him forgetfulness of his suffering. Now this is not the Lord's cruelty. He says that Krishna does not discriminate, he reciprocates. So he reciprocates based on our desire. So if our desire is to enjoy, then Krishna will make us forget all the suffering that is present in this world, so that we can enjoy. And if our desire is to serve Krishna, then Krishna will give us unlimited reasons why we should serve him. And he will give us remembrances and realizations of how this material world is a place of suffering. So it's our free will. It's always there with us. And I said the punishment is meant to reform. Certainly, if there had been no punishment, no one would have come to Krishna. But that punishment is alone not enough. Along with punishment, there's enlightenment. And along with even after enlightenment, there is free will. So everything begins with the free will. So it's a long answer, so I'll quickly repeat what I said. Maybe it will be a little more clear. The soul has a free will which can be directed towards Krishna or towards Maya. When it's directed towards Maya, he suffers. And then he can do pious activities or he can do sinful activities. And accordingly, he suffers more or less. Now, if he does sinful activities, then he is given more suffering. But still, he has his free will, what he wants to do. And Krishna, according to the free will that the living entity has, according to what he is desiring, Krishna gives him an according worldview. Okay, this is what you think is enjoyable? Okay, and think that it is enjoyable. Now, if you see, the devotees will tell you, you know, life is so short. Don't waste your life in enjoyment. The karmis will tell you, life is so short. Therefore, enjoy now. It's exactly the same information. But the conclusion they will see, life is so short, youth is going to be for such a short time. Don't lose the opportunity for enjoyment. The same information, but it will be interpreted differently. So the free will can be used whichever way we want. So according to our free will, Krishna gives a worldview according to him. You know, there's a nice story about this. One time, one alcoholics reformer, he went to alcoholic society and he wanted to tell them how dangerous alcohol is. So what he did was, he brought a jug of transparent beaker of alcohol, and then he had caught a fly. And he put the fly into the alcohol. And then the fly just fluttered, and within moments, it sank down, dead. All the alcoholics became very grave. He also became very grave. And then he saw that, and he asked them, so what do you learn from this experiment? And everybody looked down. They didn't want to say. But one of them, he had a broad smile on his face. So, what do you learn from it? He raised his hand. He says, when I drink alcohol, all the germs in my stomach will die. So, according to what our desire is, Krishna will give us the intelligence to justify whatever we want. So, it is not, as I said, it's not remembrance of our past life suffering is not necessarily a stimulus for taking to Krishna consciousness now. We can remember our past life and still not take to Krishna consciousness, or we may not remember our past life and still we may take to Krishna consciousness. It's a question of our free will. Okay? Any other questions?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah?
So my question is, when this materialistic world is full of miseries, then why did the Krishna create this world? And then Krishna wants the human being should be spiritual, then why did he provide all those, what do we call it, Maya to him? Does he want to play with the human beings?
Yeah. See, one time one person asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, what is the purpose of this world? So Prabhupada replied, enjoyment. So person was taken aback. He knew that Prabhupada taught these four regulative principles. So the Prabhupada said, not yours, Krishna's. So, and of course it's not that we don't enjoy, we also enjoy, but in relationship with Krishna. So the soul is originally in the spiritual world and there he has a loving relationship with Krishna. But love requires free will. And because we have a free will, we can choose not to love Krishna. And then when we choose not to be in harmony with Krishna, then we need a separate arena for that. We need a separate place where we can try to fulfill our independent desires. And that is the material world. So, in the material world, what Krishna does is, that soul has to love someone. He cannot live without loving. So then, he creates Maya, the illusory energy, who offers the soul substitutes for Krishna. And then the soul tries to love and reciprocate a loving relationship with all these substitutes for Krishna. But then he doesn't get any happiness to them. And by this, gradually he gets the realization that I cannot get happiness, and he turns to Krishna again. So, two things. The first, why Krishna has created Maya? Because if he did not create Maya, then there would be no opportunity for the soul to fulfill his independent desire. See, it is Maya only which enables the soul to fulfill his independent desire. Actually, for a pure devotee, Krishna is everywhere. And we cannot forget Krishna. It is only when Krishna creates Maya that we can forget Krishna and try to think that we are the enjoyers. Now, if a small child is there, and in front of him some big pahalwan is there, the child cannot even imagine that I am a strong person. Now then, if at all he has to imagine, then that either that powerful wrestler, the pahalwan, has to go away, or he should not see that pahalwan. So like that, so Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, he is all opulent full, and we cannot think of ourselves as the enjoyer as long as we can see Krishna. So then Krishna accuses us of forgetfulness of him through the agency of Maya, so that we can try to enjoy separate from him. And we try, but it is not that Krishna creates misery. Misery is inevitable when we forget Krishna. Because for a soul who has experienced the joy of loving Krishna, nothing else can ever satisfy him. And we have all experienced the joy of loving Krishna when we are in the spiritual world. So in the material world, actually the misery is considered in one sense auspicious. Just as if there is some disease in your body, the body's temperature rises. Now the temperature rises, good. Because that indicates something is wrong in the body. And then you will go to a doctor, you will take a medicine and you will get cured. So similarly, the suffering in this world is meant to be an impetus to take to spiritual life and to return to Krishna ultimately. So a devotee sees actually the sufferings of this world also as a blessing of Krishna, because the sufferings act as impetus for him to return to Krishna again. Okay, we will stop here. Now we will have kirtans. If any of you have any more questions, you can talk personally. So we'll have kirtans in, I think, the Prasadam hall. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Gaur Premanande.